Today is a great day for a car wash.
Yeah, sure. Car wash. This is the car wash on the SL podcast. Sizohlangana khona.
Good day and welcome to episode number 92 of the Car Wash. Whether you are tuning in on SL Podcast at co.za, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or Mahi King 96.7 Game Time, welcome to the show. I'm your host, Sean Robinson. Of course, Mr. Teko Madise. Tex, what's happening?
I'm good, and you, boss?
I'm good, bro. What's happening in the Madise's household lately?
Nah, just exhaustion on top of another.
First world problem, bro. But yeah. Just to cheer you up a bit, Teko.
Yeah, what's up?
Joke of the day. Here we go. I have a fear of speed bumps, but I'm slowly getting over it.
Who gives us the jokes?
Oh, man.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. No. Yeah.
It's absolutely beautiful.
I feel sorry for the listeners. More to myself, because I'm the first one to listen to this. And anyway,
an interesting story in the Circle of Duma, which we sometimes tend to forget the cost of not having fans at the stadium. And John Comitas was interviewed by Circle of Duma, and he says, you know, at the end of the season, quote unquote, we are in the plus, which is very rare in the PSL for a team to be in the plus, because of the three or four games that we have and possibly a cup game here and there, it's in the millions. So while the small games might cost us to run, the overall net is that we lose money. And he's obviously talking about hosting Chiefs, Pirates, Sundowns, and possibly a cup semi-final or a cup final here and there. But Teko, it's about time now the fans come back. I mean, it's nice to know that we know John Comitas, he's a businessman, he's a football man, and we've been down this road before, that it's quite rare to find those in the game, and he's running a tight ship there, and he's obviously running at a profit, as he has says. But you know, you're not hosting Chiefs, you're not hosting Pirates, you're not hosting Sundowns. You know, Chiefs, you know, you're guaranteed 40,000 people. Pirates, you're guaranteed 40,000 people. Sundowns, maybe 30,000, 35,000. And you're losing absolute millions, which obviously costs at the end of the season in terms of what players you can bring, what players you can afford, what coaches you can afford. Mm. And it's crazy. It's about time they come back, right?
Yeah, and what John is talking about, I think he speaks on behalf of all the other teams besides the top three.
Yeah.
You know, and
correct. It's not just him, right?
Yeah, it's not just him. Like, those are revenues that you're losing.
Yeah.
And when you could be, and that could be helping you in terms of running the club, or like you said, bringing in a player or improving certain structures within the club.
Yeah.
But also what's also interesting is, as well, Sean, is you look at what's been said about helping the economy, helping or being in the government playing its role in structures that they know that they can help the economy to be back on their feet. And we know football, the role that it plays within this. And we know the kind of in a game situation, when there is a big game, you know, the vendors that stays outside, there's a lot of jobs that have been created on the day itself.
Correct.
And I'm still saying, like we said last week, that for the fact that there is a certain number that has been given to for people to be in rallies, in whatever that they do, and I think the football also should be considered, because it's one of those elements as well that brings a lot of difference within our country as well. So it is about time. And I heard that in the Indian final there will be fans. I'm not sure as to the number. You remember I was arguing about the number, because I can't go with the 90,000 capacity stadium and I bring on 2,000. What is that? Yeah. I need to bring in 20,000, because that's like what, 10-15% of that. 20,000 is nothing to a 90,000 capacity.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's high time that the fans come back. Whether, because we cannot speak about vaccination now, because if we have to be political, people are rallying without being vaccinated. Let them come to the stadium. this shit.
Yeah, it is getting crazy. Eh? I mean, you know, we just to touch back on what John Comitas was saying, we tend to forget, and you mentioned it briefly, and we spoke about this when Blum Celtic was sold, is that
yeah.
the little businesses around the home day, match day games that people rely on for their families, you know, and that just doesn't exist at the moment. It's, I keep on forgetting about that. Let's swiftly move on. Let's chat about our man Pitzel. Last week, Al Ahly confirmed via the club's official website that following a meeting between the head of transfers, Mr. Tawfiq, and Mosimani's camp, the coach would see out the remainder of his two-year contract without a pay rise, following rife speculation about the coach's future. By remaining at Al Ahly for longer than a year, Mosimani has become just the first coach in 5 years after Houssam Al Badri to remain in the Red Eagles hot seat for more than a year. All six coaches before him have failed to achieve that feat. Pitso took to Twitter saying, quote unquote, "Thank you very much, Al Ahly. All parties are happy after that meeting. We all continue with full energies and focus to finish the current contract, ending this season. Inshallah, we might both want to enter into discussions for a new contract. It's all about timing." You know, I think, Tex, I mean, I think it would have been harsh if Pitso was fired, firstly, and secondly, he was asking, I didn't realize that he's getting paid 54 million rand a season at Al Ahly, and he was asking for 75. It's insane, dude. It's crazy. But worth it, right?
No, it's worth it. And I think, look, man, Pitso now is setting the bar high.
Yeah.
And of course, I think, you know, with his achievements and being at one of the biggest clubs in the continent, mm-hmm. I think he deserves that. I think that's the space that he wants to see himself. Like he said, he wants to win another Champions League. I think his obsession probably would try to win, you know, Club World Cup, because that's where Al Ahly should be playing, against your Bayern. Yes. If he lost against Bayern last year. So I think that's where he wants to see himself, you know, also to push more boundaries. And I think, look, I know since Coach Pitso's been in Al Ahly, I don't think the contract situation has ever been resolved or ever been settled. I think it's always been, whenever he draws or loses a game, there's always been issues about the contract. And also, I think it's one of the first few coaches that have lasted over a season at that club for the last, I don't know how many years, you know, and for the fact that he's, I think he's building that team for the next year. And I think this season he might show exactly, how good he can be with that club. And I see him staying there for another 2 years, you know, but yet again, it's one of those situations where the club is driven by religion and all that type of stuff. So, but there's a lot of issues that comes with coaching such a big club. And I think Coach Pitso knew exactly what he's getting himself into. Yeah. But it's great to see one of our own, you know, being on the top level. And I think that will inspire so many South African coaches as well to realize that, you know, coaching in the PSL is not just the pinnacle, you know.
Yeah, anything's possible, right?
Yeah, don't be rotated. You're like socks. Yeah, you've been changed every week. This week you're coaching this team. 2 months down the line, you're at Chippa United. Ah, guys.
6 months later, fired. Back at Chippa 2 months later.
Yeah, it's... So Peter's setting the bar high to make sure that the coaches understand that as well, that you can actually succeed outside South Africa as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think his end goal is to coach in Europe somewhere, right?
Yeah, I'm sure.
And he's good enough. It's obviously tough for an African coach, but not impossible. So let's watch this one closely. I think they got off to a dodgy start on their season. I think it was a draw, if I'm not mistaken, on the weekend, but we'll follow up with that. From there, we move on to the international news desk.
Time now for the latest from the international world of football, and we are joined now by Sokola Duma's international news correspondent Kurt Bakkerfield. How are you doing today, Kurt?
I'm good, thanks, Aiden. How are you doing, man?
Yes, I'm very well, thank you. All right, Kurt, let's kick things off with a topic that's fairly close to our hearts, being fans of Manchester United here. Their run of form of recent weeks has been disgusting. It's been appalling. It's
disastrous. You know,
all of the negative adjectives in the world we can use right now. And after the 5-0 embarrassment to Liverpool, where Mohamed Salah just, proved to everyone why, you know, he's one of the best in the world, rumors are that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has been given, I believe, three more games. Apparently, Alex Ferguson pitched up to the training ground after that match and vouched for his former player and all of that. And it's coming out now that former Inter Milan boss Antonio Conte is very interested in the job. Would you please elaborate a bit on that topic there?
Solskjaer obviously has done well for the club. You and I, as Manchester United fans, will know that and recognize that. He isn't a very good tactician. He's not a top level football manager, but he's done very well to improve the atmosphere at Manchester United. I think most Manchester United fans were at least lost a lot of interest under Louis van Gaal and then Jose Mourinho, where things seemed poisonous at times. Mm. So, you know, for me as a Manchester United fan, I was just happy to see a free-flowing counter-attacking style be reintroduced, a style that I grew up watching Manchester United play with. It was fun, a lot of goals. So for me, it felt like we got our Manchester United back. But obviously, Solskjaer not being on the level of a Jurgen Klopp or Thomas Tuchel or Pep Guardiola has his limits. And yep. I think that he has pretty much reached that right now. So he's done well, but he should have been removed following the defeat to Liverpool. Like I said, been some good performances during his time, but those performances largely went down to coaching, but because he has really, really good attacking players at his disposal. So tactically against Liverpool, and not to get like too technical, but what happened was Manchester United tried to press Liverpool, tried to win the ball back in areas that Liverpool could easily play through us.
Yeah.
Liverpool is not only one of the best teams in England, but the best teams in the world. We could do that against a smaller side, you know. So what I read was that Solskjaer basically has the man closest to the ball try and close down the player who has the ball. So the man closest to any Liverpool player was instructed to run to that player. But if it's not a coordinated press, if there's no cohesion and there's not an idea and a method behind trying to win the ball back or to force mistakes, it's going to cause problems. And that's exactly what happened against Liverpool. We saw within, I think it was 5 or 7 minutes, Liverpool were 1-0 up. And it's because Aaron Wan-Bissaka goes into an area of the pitch he doesn't need to be in. So he tries to press Liverpool's left back 20 meters inside his own half, inside Robertson's own half. And this causes Lindelof to come all the way across. Maguire has to follow and Shaw has to follow. Now, those guys look like they were in the wrong, especially Shaw and Maguire, but they are just trying to keep their defensive shape. So if one guy gets dragged out of position or takes himself out of position, those guys naturally will follow him. They have to in order to maintain a back four.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened. We got carved open so easily. It looked like schoolboy. It was a schoolboy error. So yeah, players playing out of position, defenders being dragged, McTominay and Fred with too much space to cover in midfield. These are all issues that a top level manager and perhaps somebody like Antonio Conte would not allow to happen. You know, so it was very disappointing. I think Solskjaer probably should have been sacked immediately after that game, although that's very harsh, you know, because he's a club legend. I think that's the way that the club should have gone. So now what's being said is that the club are going to give Solskjaer maybe the next 3 games to try and fix things. But for me, it's kind of setting him up for failure, because we play Spurs this weekend, which will not be an easy game. We play Atalanta next week in the Champions League, and then we play Manchester City. And it feels like the board are allowing things to get worse, so that when Solskjaer eventually does fail and the team does fail to pick up 3 points in all of those games, they can turn around and say, well, we had no choice but to fire him. But yes, you are right. Apparently, Sir Alex Ferguson arrived at the training ground to defend Solskjaer. But with all due respect to Sir Alex Ferguson, who, you know, is probably the greatest manager of all time, the game's moved on. And he's been out of the sport for almost 10 years now. So I don't think that his opinion should have any weight. But yes, Antonio Conte is the favorite.
And Kurt, how do you feel about Antonio Conte potentially coming into the managerial role at Manchester United?
So I was first concerned regarding those links, because Antonio Conte is somebody that I would have probably previously associated with defensive football. But, you know, I've obviously done a lot of reading over the last few days, and looking back at the way his Chelsea team played and the way his Inter Milan side played. They scored a lot of goals, a lot of goals. Inter Milan last season were quite devastating at times. Chelsea, a few seasons ago, I think it was the 2016-17 season where he won the Premier League with them, scored, I think, more goals than anybody that season. So I don't know if it's actually the worst call. I think Conte is not somebody who is going to try and please the board by playing the Manchester United way. He's going to come in with his own ideas. And I also don't think that he's going to care too much about the feelings of the players. He is going to play what he thinks is the best team, and the team that, you know, makes the most sense in terms of structure, in terms of whether players, certain players complement one another. For example, I don't think that Ronaldo starts every single game if Antonio Conte comes in. So
quite a statement as well, though.
I don't think he does, because he's not working hard off the ball. And Antonio Conte plays a very demanding style of football where his players need to press and close down players and work really hard off the ball, as hard off the ball as they do on the ball. So I don't know if Ronaldo is a regular starter under Conte. You know, and in saying that, that could prove to be a problem for Conte. That might be a very important factor in negotiations. I think Conte is somebody who will tell the board straight away that I'm not here to please players. And certainly not, Ronaldo, who, you know, joined United, big, big return. Everyone was really excited about it, and he scored goals. He scored 6 goals in 10 games, but ultimately, he has caused a lot of, how do I say this? He's caused a lot of structural issues to the way the team plays. And it's had a knock-on effect. Pogba suddenly seems unimportant to the team. He's been on the bench for the last 2 weeks. And before Ronaldo arrived this season, Pogba had got 4 assists in 2 games. Jadon Sancho isn't playing as much as he probably expected to play after arriving for 70-odd million. Jesse Lingard, who had a really good loan spell at West Ham, and who's had really good moments coming off the bench for United, has not been able to get into the team. Donny van de Beek. So I think that Conte is somebody who will come in and have his idea and his style of play, which he'll implement. I don't really know how he'll implement that, seeing as though he plays, it's a 3-4, what is it? 3-4-1-2. So it's three centre-backs.
I actually watched a really interesting video of Conte's tactics when he won the league. I think it was in 2016-17.
Yeah.
He was playing a 3-5-2. And at times, yes, David Luiz, the centre, the middle of the three centre-backs, would push up. And then
into midfield.
All of a sudden, there were 2 defenders and then 5 or 6 midfielders, people in the middle of the pitch. And they would just shut down the ball then and there and then restructure going forward.
Yeah, so exactly. And I don't know how Conte is going to fit United's attacking contingent. You know, I think on paper, United have one of the best attacking groups of players in the world. So I don't know how he gets Ronaldo, Greenwood, Rashford, Jadon Sancho, Jesse Lingard, Anthony Martial, Edinson Cavani, all in the same team and playing with just 3 attackers. I don't know how that happens. So it's going to be very interesting. I have read that the club are unsure about his appointment. They're unsure as to whether he is the right man. So I wouldn't be surprised, Aiden, if United saw out the season with Solskjaer. Although that is going to come with its own problems, because I've read players are already checking out. I think certain players feel like Solskjaer isn't really productive for their careers. So that's probably going to cause its own issues, but maybe it makes more sense to hang around for somebody like Graham Potter at Brighton, who is a really, really good up-and-coming English manager with a really bright future. Or someone like Erik ten Hag from Ajax Amsterdam. I think Zinedine Zidane, someone who's linked for the job, but I don't see why
he's
he would be interested.
Like, no, he doesn't want to coach.
Yeah, I can't see him being interested in the United job at all. I don't think it's something that would... interest again, but interest him. But yeah, it's, I can't wait to see what happens. I think that these next few fixtures are really important for Solskjaer's career. I think that the upcoming international break is when Manchester United, will most likely make that managerial change, whether it's Antonio Conte or not. I'm not sure, but yeah, let's see what happens.
I think it was Jamie Carragher who said this. I could be wrong, but Thomas Tuchel, Pep Guardiola, and Jurgen Klopp, have you seen their resumes? They've come from massive, massive clubs.
Yeah.
Thomas Tuchel, Borussia Dortmund, Jurgen Klopp as well, Pep Guardiola, I mean Barcelona and Bayern Munich. But if you look at Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's resume, he's come from Cardiff, I believe, and some Norwegian team. He doesn't have the experience to manage a side of Manchester United stature. So it kind of makes sense as to why everything's going wrong.
Yeah. No, I mean, also the game is just moving forward so fast now, you know. Tactics and data and stats are becoming so important. And, you know, Pep Guardiola kind of revolutionized football or re-revolutionized football in 2008 with that Barcelona team. Jurgen Klopp brought crazy success to Dortmund when he took over. I can't remember exactly which year it was, but he won, you know, the Bundesliga. He took Dortmund to a Champions League final, challenging against a very, very good Bayern Munich team in Germany. Thomas Tuchel also had success with Dortmund, but then coached PSG, where he's worked with some of the most high profile players in the sport.
Exactly.
Although it didn't really work out for him in France, he is, you know, it's well known that Tuchel is an incredible tactician. Solskjaer just is not of that level. Yeah. And I don't think that United fans are even, I'm not as a United fan angry at Solskjaer. I just believe that he's not good enough. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I think that we spoke about it when Lampard was fired at Chelsea. We spoke about it on the show, and I said, and Teko and Sean agreed with me, even players at this high level need coaching. They need clear instructions. You know, not every week can you just field a strong team and expect to get 3 points. You are going to need to outwit and outsmart your opponents. And that's what Thomas Tuchel and Pep Guardiola do against the smallest teams. They do it against Watford. You know, they spend hours and hours coming up with an idea and a plan for just a game against Watford. And if they end up beating that Watford side 5-0, maybe they didn't need to pay that much attention to that fixture, but they do anyway. Yeah. The attention to detail is incredible. And I don't think that Solskjaer has that. And there's been so many times where he's let the side down with bad decisions and bad in-game management. And again, that's not because Solskjaer is a bad person. It's just because he doesn't have the experience that those managers do.
Exactly.
So I think that, you know, this will definitely be his last season if he isn't fired in the next couple of weeks. But I do think that the time to fire him was directly after that Liverpool game. Maybe not an hour after, but maybe the next day. You know, he's going to remain a club legend, and I totally see why Ferguson would stand up for him. He is well liked in the dressing room. But I feel like when you have a team like that, when you construct a team like that with Bruno Fernandes and Ronaldo and all these big personalities, you are going to be expected to win. And that's what happened, like we just mentioned, with Lampard at Chelsea. They had this huge transfer window and he couldn't get that team to play football, or at least to be of the level they are now under Tuchel. So yeah, let's see what happens.
Look, Solskjaer, who'll always have a place at the club, just not on the touchline. But Kurt, thank you very much for the international news desk and the update on international football. That is all we have time for today. Have a fantastic day.
Cheers, Aiden.
Tick, I want to touch on a story from Rulani Makwene where he sort of slams Bafana, and he does have a point.
Why?
Yeah, he says... So basically, he said that he's claimed that several of their first team regulars have returned from the national team duty, either injured or burnt out, but there's never been any sort of communication from the Bafana medical team and the Sundowns medical team. And he says this happens again and again and again and again. And this is probably a reason why a lot of local teams and teams, I guess, everywhere are reluctant to release their players on international duty. And it obviously puts a player in a bit of a predicament, doesn't it? Because you want to represent your country, but also you're playing for a team like Sundowns where, obviously, don't forget there's a lot of money involved with Sundowns every time you win a game. If you burnt out, you miss out on that number one. What's your take on this, Tex? It's an interesting one because, we want to see the best players in our national team, but also you've got to respect the fact that they've got a club to pay for who they're contracted to.
Look, Sean, I've seen this happen when you play week in, week out, more games at your club, more minutes at your club, you get to the national team, you start doing physical stuff. You start running and all, doing all that physicality and also being able to travel and go play. It becomes difficult because now you train differently when you get to the national team. Mm-hmm. And one would think that being in the national team, you would be selected based on how you perform at your clubs. They would have assumed your training schedule or your training methods. They would load or slow down a little bit so that you can be fresher on the games. Mm-hmm. It becomes totally different. When you get to the national team, it's physical stuff. You start running, you start doing jumps. And I'm like, dude, I've been playing regularly. Yeah. I don't need fitness.
Yeah.
You know? So I think one of the situations is it's what Sundowns are dealing with right now. And this is a club that not only challenges the league, it also challenges the champions, CAF Champions League.
Sure.
And they're giving you their best players and they come back very injured, no information, no communication. It becomes a problem. And not only for Sundowns, I think for all other teams as well. Because now, if there's no communication, there's no understanding between the two clubs, then we're going to start having those friction. And then the same coach also that will come out and say, teams don't want to give me their players.
Yeah.
But we're giving you them when they're fresh. When you bring them back, they are injured and all that type of stuff with no information at hand, with nothing. We have to figure things out. So I think for Beta Bafana, for Beta Hugo Bruce to do his job very well, for teams to release players in time and the players that he needs, I think that is, this needs to be sorted out as soon as possible. And otherwise, there's going to be issues for Bafana.
You brought up a decent point. I know you didn't really say it, but you meant it in the fact that why on earth, when you're in a Bafana camp or any international camp, would you work on fitness?
No.
Because, you know, you're fit.
You're
100%.
Bruh.
Yeah.
You expected to be playing week in, week out at your club. You expected to be doing all the donkey works at your club. When you get to the national team, there's no time.
Correct.
Normally, when you're in the national team, there's not even enough time to prepare for a game. Why would I be doing fitness tests?
Yeah.
Why would I be running?
And it happens.
It happens so many times. When you need to get to the national team, do your tactics, do your video analysis.
Of course.
Ah, corner.
And you can do, you know what? And then you can do two sessions a day, right? If you're just doing tactics.
Of course you can.
Easy,
Sean. That's why you know, Sean, I've always ever since this, I don't know what they call these things that the players are wearing underneath their t-shirt. The monitors, the whatever that has a tracker on them that yes. records data.
Yeah.
I've always
stats.
Asked.
Stats.
Yes, I've always asked people that are using that, not players. I asked them, why are you guys doing this? Just because other teams are doing it, or are you actually getting data from this?
Yeah.
And if you are getting data from this, what are you doing with the data? Are you doing what you're supposed to do according to that? Because I strongly believe that you get to, before you even get to the national team, I would assume every team uses that. As a coach, national team coach, I would ask, hey, Sean, is Aiden, I want to select Aiden for national team in the next coming few weeks. How is his fitness level? Can you please send me his data?
Correct.
You see? So now, when you get to the national team, you don't have to frog jumps and run up the stairs and do what? I've got your data in place.
You know, the stats.
Yeah, so we have all this technology in our disposal, but you don't use them, and you get you find players are not performing very well. You find players being exhausted in the game because we have in this data even during training sessions. We don't see that other players peak too early. Whatever we're supposed to peak on Saturday, they peak on Thursday. So therefore, on Saturday they'll be exhausted. So you need to know how to manage those. You need to those things the players are wearing. They need to be checked all the time, because if you don't check them, you'll never get the correct data, and then you'll be surprised why the player is not performing when he's supposed to be performing, because you don't check in your phone data, bro.
Yeah, bro. I think a lot of teams just think it looks cool, right? It looks professional. So yeah. Just throw this on.
They probably don't have batteries in that thing.
All right, but let's move on to this week in football history.
Today we remember great moments from the past. We dive into the time capsule. Join us as we remember great moments from this week in football history.
On the 26th of October 2008, Liverpool won 1-0 at Stamford Bridge to end Chelsea's English record home league unbeaten streak of 86. The streak started under manager Jose Mourinho on the 20th of March 2008. On the 27th of October 1944, construction began at Real Madrid's new stadium, the Nuevo Estadio Chamartín, now known as the Estadio Santiago Bernabéu. And finally, this week in 1960, one of the greatest players of all times was born in Lanús, Buenos Aires. Do you know who this is, Teco?
Uh-uh.
And of course, I'm talking about Diego Armando Maradona.
Oh, okay.
Maradona scored over 250 goals for club and country during a career that spanned no more than 18 years. Having played for Barcelona, Napoli, Boca Juniors, Maradona's career was one that everyone looks up to. May his soul rest in peace. Yeah. I always forget that he's actually passed away. That's crazy.
Yeah, man.
Righty. Let's move on towards the car of the week. And this is a crazy one. Royal AM's chairman, Andile Mpisani. How do these guys make their money, Teko? Do you know?
Hey, chief. I wish I knew.
I mean, you're talking stupid money here, bro. I mean, he's a youngster. I don't know how young he is, but he's been flaunting his Lamborghini Hurricane. The Lamborghini Hurricane might lack the visual theater of some of the previous models that have come out of Sant'Agata and it's the Countach, which has the potential to turn heads like any self-respecting supercar. The Lamborghini Hurricane has a pretty tough job on its hands when it launched in 2014 as a successor to the marquee's most popular car ever, the Lamborghini Gallardo, which you all know very well.
Mm.
All the Hurricane engines are normally aspirated variations of the Audi 5.2 litre V10s, which I didn't know, which you find in the R8s, and the model was launched with a brand new aluminium and carbon fiber chassis. With performance to match its wild looks, even the slowest Hurricane at 0 to 100 in barely over 3 seconds, while top speed sits around 330 k's an hour, ensuring that Lamborghini will really be embarrassed in the game of top trumps. Coming in at around 6 million rand, I give it a 9 out of 10. 6 million rand, Teko, for something with an engine.
when you have that type of guap, my brother, you it's easy to roll like that.
And Dila is he's 20 years old, bro. I just checked.
Yeah, no, and now he's the youngest chairman. You know, so we need such chairmen. We need the young generations to come through.
Yeah, but be a bit classier, bro. Don't bring out 200 rand notes and start paying the players on the field, right?
But to be honest with you, he's 20. Yeah,
what does he know?
Yeah, against guys that are, you know, been in the game for, you know, more than 40 years.
Yeah.
So at some point you need to up to have that experience to know what are the right things to do. So
sure.
And sometimes I feel like with that incident, you know, the mom could have done better and could have known better.
No,
you need a little
him.
Bit of you need a little bit of guidance. But also, you know, sometimes when you're a kid, you don't need to be told that. You can always be told that the fire is burning, it's painful, don't go there. And sometimes just leave you, just go there. Yeah. Get fucking burned so that you can understand that the fire is hot.
Pass up.
Yeah, so
exactly.
So I think there's a lot of stuff that this boy is going to do that will be, you know, raising eyebrows within the PSL itself. But he's in business, so this probably his ways of learning how to run a football club.
crazy, dude. Absolutely insane. But I suppose if you want to afford a 6 million rand car, we're going to need a little bit of motivation.
Motivation from who?
Motivation. Is it me or you?
It's you, comrade.
Okay, I'll go. Lack and limitation can only exist when we make room for them in our minds.
Mm. From who? Who is that from?
That is from, I think I quoted him last week again, from a gentleman Bob Proctor. But, Teko, that is how we wrap up episode 92 of The Car Wash. Whether you've been listening on SL Podcasts at CR.za, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, or Mighty King 96.7 Game Time, thank you so much for tuning in. I've been your host, Sean Roberts, and of course, my good friend, Mr. Teko Madise.
Shonisto.
Thank you, my friend, for getting out of bed.
Thank you very much.
Today is a great day for car wash.
Yeah, sure. Car wash. This is the car wash on the SL podcast. This is a Hlangana Khona.